Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Welcome to Dark Poutine. I am Mike Brown. No, Matthew is not with me for this because when we did episode 219 originally, we thought it's only going to be one episode, but we got so many people sending in really great stories that we thought we would feature a bunch of them. So Matthew's not here for the intro, but you'll hear him more later on.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during the Dark Poutine podcast are solely those of the producer and do not necessarily represent those of Curious Cast, its affiliate, Global News, nor their parent company, Chorus Entertainment.
Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish. Our content is often intense and some listeners may find it disturbing. We are not experts on the topics we present, nor are we journalists. We are ordinary Canadian schmucks chatting about crime and the dark side of history. Let's get to it. Put on your toque, grab yourself a double-double and a Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some Dark Poutine. This episode, as promised, is our bonus episode featuring listener stories of their own UFO experiences. Our first story, however, is a little different. It comes to us from listener Petra Bunn, whose father-in-law, Ken Bunn, a Saskatchewan wheat farmer, had an experience one night while driving in the late 1960s. Ken later recorded his experience for his grandchildren, and Petra then shared that tape with Dark Poutine. After we hear from Ken, we'll hear a bit from Petra as she chats about the audio and Ken Bunn.
Hello, Carla. And I imagine that Mitchell's there too, and Mummy and Daddy. Well, I relate to you an incident that I had in observing what was a UFO, which is an unidentified object. I'm sure you're well aware of that, and you've heard about that in school. Back about 30 years ago, in the late 60s, it was very evident, and there were lots of sightings of queer objects and just objects that people couldn't understand what they were. And word got around that, these were the Martians or somebody from outer space coming down and trying to land on our continent. As you know, it could be the up from Mars or some of those other planets. And this was quite evident in that time. And I will explain to you or tell you of an incident that I had of an encounter with, something that was strange, and it wasn't. So I called it an unidentified object, UFO. Your dad will recall to you that at one time, I was a wheat pool delegate, which means a farmer's representative. And in so doing, I'd go to meetings in the country, different towns. As you know, where I live is in Purdue, about 50 miles west of Saskatoon. And I would go to about four or five different towns surrounding. And this one night in late October, and it was in the fall, I was up at Sunningdale, That's about 30 miles north of Purdue. And when I left the meeting about 11:30, it was quite a dark night, but the stars were out, but there was no moon. And of course, I had about 30 miles to drive on a country road, and I came down through Struan, R. Lee, and I was within about 12 miles of Purdue, going straight south on the R. Lee Purdue Road, and I could see the Purdue lights in the distance and the different farm lights, and I had the car radio on. I was all alone, and it was near midnight, and you're getting kind of sleepy. But all of a sudden, I noticed as I was going south, to my left in the horizon was a white light, which seemed unfamiliar. It was out in the fields, but then as I went along, it was way up in the air. So being curious, I turned the radio off and stopped the car in the side of the road, and I got out of the car because I thought, well, this must be an airplane, which is very odd at midnight for an airplane, a small plane at that, to be traveling along. But it wasn't. If it was an airplane, it would have had a glaring light out ahead of it like a headlight. But what it was just a big round ball of light. And there was no noise. That's a peculiar thing of it. And that's what struck me. That's why I stopped the car's motor. So, and the night was still, not a sound. And here was this object. It was about 200 feet off the ground. And it was about, off to the east of me, about pretty nearly a quarter of a mile. And it was up in the air, of course, as I said, about 200 or 300 feet. And it was coming from the south. And as I stopped and was out of the car looking at it, it got pretty nearly opposite me and going in a northerly direction. And it was just, it just looked like a cabin with a light all lit up in there. But there was no observations of, or I couldn't observe anyone in it. It was just a light. But, and I tried to look for any structural part of the light. You know, you'd think if it was helicopter or something like that, it'd be a landing gear, but it was such a dark night and the light was so bright that it just obscured any vision I could get. And as I stood there, it kept going north and north, and then it took in a northwesterly direction, crossed the road further down about 2 miles north of me, and it gradually went out of sight. But it was heading towards another city, North Battleford. Well, I was curious, all right. I was going to say I didn't think much of it, but I was curious. Such an odd thing, right in the middle of the night, to see something like that. When I got home the next morning, I contacted the news media, local paper in Saskatoon, and the radio station CFQC. One of them, I forget now which was, sent out a reporter to me, and I recounted the incident, and it was in the paper, and they discussed it a bit, but as I said, there was other sightings of various odd sightings of, and they were all different at that time. So it just went on, and I never heard anything more about it. And I haven't dug into it since then. I've just let it go. But now that you have asked me for about it, well, I've done my best to try and explain. I still think, in my own mind, that it was an unidentified object, UFO. How else can you account for something strange in the middle of the night like that? So I hope that this will help you, and you know, you can take it to your school and tell your classmates or your teachers, and it'll just be another curiosity, but it is something that I actually saw that was different. So with that, Carla, thanks a lot for asking me to explain my vision of a UFO, and I hope that in the future, not in my time, but in yours and Mitchell's time, that maybe you will be able to solve or see these mysteries solved. I'm sure that in your lifetime, you will see these mysteries solved, whether it's somebody from Mars or Martians, as they call them, or some other planet. Well, I'll never know, but I hope that you people will find out through your studies. So with that, I'd like to say thank you for asking me to do this. Bye-bye.
Let's talk a little bit about Ken Bunn, because I'm super interested in this guy.
Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about Ken and what kind of guy that he was?
Yeah, okay. So Ken is my father-in-law, mm-hmm. and he was a wheat farmer in Saskatchewan. So he and his wife had four children, and Alan, my husband, is the youngest of the four. When he was farming, he was also involved in the Saskatchewan Wheat Board. And so he was kind of a businessman as well, if mm-hmm. you know what I mean. Like he was, my husband was saying in his younger years, he was, fairly serious, like a little quieter. And as he got older and was getting closer to retirement, he was more outgoing and mm-hmm. Friendly and jovial and, you know, telling stories and things like that. So when this incident happened to him, it was right in the time where, you know, he was the businessman, sort of. And so sure. My husband at that time, he was about 10 years old. His dad was talking to a newspaper there in Saskatoon about this UFO sighting, and he remembered like that his mom was kind of she was concerned that people would consider him a kook, mm-hmm. you know, talking about UFO sightings and stuff like that. So she always kind of wanted him to kind of downplay it. But he did tell everybody about it, and he wasn't worried that he would, you know, he himself wasn't worried that he would be looked at as crazy or anything like that, you know. And so he just went ahead and told people, you know, the story of what happened. And, so my husband remembers seeing an article in the newspaper there, and I did try to look for it, but I couldn't find it. And he looked through some records that he had, and he couldn't find it either. And he contacted his brother and two sisters, and they didn't know where it was either, so I wasn't able to get that for you, which is too bad.
But that's okay.
I did have the tape, so I knew where that was.
Well, how did this tape come about? Like he mentions, I think he's mentioning children's names. Is it his grandchildren that he made the tape
for? Yeah, my two children.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so very sweet.
Oh yeah, I know. He was a great grandfather to them, like very friendly and curious about what they're doing and how they were doing in school and things like that. And so I think this is how this came about, is that like we were living in Calgary at the time, and he, of course, was living in Purdue, Saskatchewan. So they would come and visit. And quite often on their way out to the coast, which is where they tried to spend winters to get away from the snow out there, you know, in Saskatchewan and whatnot. So they would stop in, and he would always say, well, you know, how's school and what are you learning and things like that. And so my daughter said, oh, well, we're learning about outer space and UFOs. And so he just came out with it. He said, well, I saw a UFO once. Oh. And, of course, everyone is just like, this is the first that I'd heard of it. Of course, my husband remembered from, you know, when he was 10 and whatnot. And, of course, his wife kind of rolled her eyes a little bit again. But, you know, I said, oh, my God, really? That is so exciting, you know, because I'm a believer, you see. So I was interested in what he had to say. So I asked him, I said, well, when you get home, would you be able to record everything that you know of and saw? And then I will have my daughter take it to her class so that they can listen to it in class, which is what happened. He had gone home, and a week later or so, I got this cassette tape in the mail. And we listened to it, and I thought, well, that's pretty darn cool. And so I sent it along with her, and her class listened to it, and they thought that was pretty awesome too. And so I just put it away. I just kept it with where I have all my picture albums and stuff like that, so I knew exactly where it was.
Well, he said it happened around the late 60s, you think?
That's right.
Okay.
In October, okay. I believe. Yeah, in October, and I listening to the cassette tape, I heard him say that there had been a lot of sightings of UFOs around that time, and so that piqued my interest again. I got on the internet, and I kind of Googled some things. I found a whole bunch, you know, and so I'm not surprised that, you know, he actually did see something. He's not the kind to try to draw attention to himself or make up stories or anything. He's just a really solid guy,
yeah.
You know. And so I just thoroughly do believe that he saw something for sure.
I think 99% of the people are actually honest that they feel that they saw something. I really do. You know, there's probably the odd person who's just making something up, but
yeah.
They saw something, and right. Whatever that is whatever it was, but they saw something. Thank you again, though, for sharing Ken's story.
He would be very proud to know, though, that, you know, somebody's, looking at it and doing something with it, and I think he'd be very proud of that.
Did you not just fall for that guy from the first sentence?
I want him to be my grandpa.
Like, everybody wants someone like that to be their grandpa.
I want him to be my grandpa.
What a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And what a super interesting story.
Yeah. Again, he's not saying, ooh, it was aliens. He's like, he's explaining what he saw.
And it was a fun thing that happened to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. This is the thing. And this is why I think we should be really careful with who we make fun of in regard to these things, because some people are describing exactly what they saw.
Yeah.
They're not making something up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge difference between somebody like Grandpa and somebody who's like, you know, they were green men and they, you know, did this.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. Now, this is, you know, you can, you know, that story is very believable.
Yeah.
Not saying what it was. He saw what he saw.
Well, there are people who claim to have had encounters that, you know, maybe there is something in the consciousness that's happening. I don't know. Like, there's all kinds of fascinating things. But I do have trouble with the close encounter of, I think it's the fourth kind. I do have troubles with the close encounters that involved, I met a person from outer space.
Yeah.
I have trouble with that. I struggle with those. But I don't want to paint everybody who claims they've seen a UFO with that brush.
Of course not.
Yeah. So next up, we will hear from listener Ryan D. as he tells us about his experience. Let's listen in. Welcome to the show, Ryan. Ryan is here and has agreed to share a couple of short stories about possible encounters with UFOs. So, Ryan, welcome.
This is exciting and weird at the same time.
Tell me about the first experience you had. Like, how old were you? Where was it? All that kind of thing.
Right. Okay, so I was born in Montreal, but I grew up in a town called Saint-Anne-de-Sablevois. It's about 40 minutes outside of Montreal. It's on Route 133. If you go south, you're going to hit the American border, and you can cross the border and go into the United States. Mm-hmm. If you head north from Sablevois, you're going to hit Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a big military college there, and there's a big military base, and I went to school there. But ultimately, I lived in Sablevois, where my two stories take place. So like I said, highway, Route 133, and that's where our house was on. It was like a farmhouse. It was an old farm. We didn't do any farming. Everything around there was basically cornfields and dairy farms. My first story takes place somewhere between, I'm like 8 and 9 years old. And so that would be 1981 or 1982. I was born in 1974. I'm 47 now. So I recall is that it was at night. I was sleeping and I woke up. The air felt like sort of static, like electricity. That's how it sort of felt to me. Like, so it was just a buzz in the air. And it kind of, you know, I was a kid, like I said, 8 or 9, and I was sort of like, not disturbed by it, but I was just sort of, you know, waking up hazy, and it's like this feeling. And I decided I was going to go down. It was a two-story house. I was going to go downstairs and sleep on the couch. Like, I was just going to go down there. It's going to make me feel comfortable or whatever. And like I said, I had this sensation of this static electricity in the air. So I go down to the living room, and we had a big L-shaped couch. And I sort of just slept in the crutch of the corner of the L-shaped couch. And if you lie down there, I could look out the living room and see the front door of our house. All along the side of the house was like big farm windows. And because we were right beside the highway, you could hear transport trucks and mm-hmm. cars and everything whizzing by all night long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I fall asleep. I get there. I grab my blanket and I fall asleep. And then at some point I wake up because we had a family dog named Tuffy. It was like a border collie cross with something else. Like, I think a German Shepherd or something like that. She was a mix, but good dog. She woke me up because she laid her head on my arm as I was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of woke up. And I was just like, oh, the dog's like looking for attention or something like that. And I kind of put my hand on her head and just started, you know, petting her a little bit as I drifted back off to sleep. Wasn't going anywhere. She was just sitting there with me. And I woke up again at some point, and I could see lights going by the windows of my house. But I didn't hear anything. My recollection is I couldn't hear any sounds of like a transport truck or a car. And literally the highway is like maybe 300 yards away. It's not that far. And then I drift off to sleep again. And I open my eyes at one point, and it's dark. There's no lights on in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I look outside my living room, and I recollect as I saw maybe three or four shadowy shapes. Okay. I couldn't make out what they were. My dog was still with me. It just seemed really weird. That same staticky feel was in the air. And I was like 8 or 9 years old. I just grabbed my blanket and pulled it over my head.
Oh, wow.
Because I was just like, I don't know what I'm seeing here. And everything seems weird, you know, like I'm mm-hmm. just a kid, you know. And I drifted off to sleep. And that was my first experience that I had. The next day, I spoke to my mother and my father because they were like, why are you sleeping on the couch?
Yeah.
And I said, I was having this weird feeling. I went down to the couch. Tuffy, our dog, was acting a little bit weird, like she was just there with me. Not that, you know, she wouldn't come around for attention, but it was just the whole situation was very odd. And my dad, who's kind of a skeptic like me, even to this day, kind of dismissed my story mm-hmm. as just, yeah, okay, you had a dream or something like that. My mom was a little more intrigued. She listened to my story, and that's as far as that went. And that's my first thing. And I mean, I've always questioned these stories myself.
Like, right. Yeah.
Was it sleep paralysis, or was I dreaming, or it didn't feel like a dream? It could have been lucid dreaming. It felt very, very real. And so that's my first story. I can move on to the second if you'd like, if you have any questions.
Let's move on to the second one. So how old were you then?
I believe I was about 12 years old, 12 or 13. So it would have been 85 or 86. You know, it was just such a long time ago. I can't remember the exact mm-hmm. time frame. But I was older. And I remember that just because at that point, my parents would have me babysit my brother so they could go out and have an evening on a night on the town kind of thing. And, you know, back in 85 and 86, you'd let your 12-year-old just
yeah, totally.
Take care of your kids.
Yeah, exactly. And,
you know, plus we lived in a rural community. There was nobody, you know, coming by or anything like that. So my parents went out for a night on the town. And I was, you know, got to stay home. I probably had a TV dinner or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, got my brother to bed. It was starting to get later. It was dark out. I was in the family living room again. And I remember the lights were on in the house, like in the living room and out in the kitchen. And I was lying in the exact same place that I just described in the first story, like, because it was just, that was the couch, and, you know, it was the spot my dad usually took, but he's not there, so I'm in that spot, and I've got the television remote, and I'm watching TV, you know, it's, like I said, 85, 86, and it's starting to get late, and I remember Johnny Carson being on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was watching the Johnny Carson show, and I drifted off to sleep. And then I woke up at some point, and this is, like I said, this is where the parallel is. Like, there was this static electricity in the air, this energy. I just didn't understand. It vibed. And I was looking, I woke up and I was looking at the TV, and the TV was still on. I don't even remember if it was Johnny Carson on at that point anymore, but something was on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, with that static electricity, there was almost like a blur in the air. And because I say that in the second story is because the lights were on in the house and in the living room and outside of the living room,
mm-hmm.
which they weren't in my first story. So when I woke up in this instance, I had that same sensation, and everything just seemed to be hazy. Like there was a filter over my eyes.
Oh, weird.
You know, I could see.
Mm-hmm.
Electricity felt to be like just vibrating, and it was making things fuzzy around me. And as I opened my eyes, like I said, I could see the front door of our house, and the front door of our house had windows on it as well. And I could see lights outside of the front door. And so we had a driveway that led up to the front door. And in my brain at the moment, I was like, my parents must be home. Like, right. It's the car lights. They've sure. just pulled into the thing, you know, and I've just woken up. So I get up to the front door because I just want to peer out the window and I expect to see my parents though. Mm-hmm. And what I see is two lights. I was just like, what are those? Like, I didn't understand. My brain wasn't comprehending what I was seeing. So I open the front door, like, look out. These two lights shoot north away from my property, sort of get over top of the cornfield that's like adjacent to our property. And we didn't own that cornfield. It was owned by somebody else. And the lights start to head west. So I run to the back door where we had a patio door. And I open up the patio door and I look out it. And I see these two lights. They're just whizzing over this cornfield. And the cornfield goes for a good, probably a quarter mile or something like that, three quarters of a mile. And then they just shoot up into the sky and they disappear. And I don't, you know, I don't see them anymore. Oddly enough is I go back into the house and my last recollection was I woke up in my bedroom. I was laying halfway in my bedroom.
Oh, weird.
And halfway out of my bedroom. And I don't remember how I got there. And I don't remember anything that happened in between that time. I saw those lights shoot up into the sky. And then I closed the door and went back into the house. I don't have a recollection of what took place there. It's, and that's basically it. Like, it's odd. It's very vivid type of stuff. I'll say I'm a skeptic. I doubt my own memories at times.
Sure.
But I've told my wife these stories. Mm-hmm. I told my mother and father these stories. My dad was a really big skeptic. He didn't really believe anything I was saying. It's so vivid. They felt so real that it's just hard to dismiss them as dreams or paralysis or something like that. Like, I, you know, it could sure. be like I wasn't, you know, on drugs or alcohol or anything like that. I was just a kid. So, I mean, that's it. That's my stories. I don't know if they intrigued you or. I've never felt that energy thing ever again, like in my life. I've never had that sensation of that electric static in the air. And an interesting point is, I don't know if you know, but back in the 90s, I think it might have been Unsolved Mysteries or one of those parallel sort of type shows.
Yeah.
But if you look up Saint-Jean sur Richelieu, there have been like UFO sightings going back like to the 60s and 70s.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's just kind of really interesting because it seems like there's a lot of activity around there. And like when I, you know, like I said, there's a military base and there's stuff like that. It just makes, you know, I don't know. It's very X-Files-y, but it just makes me go like, what's going on in that region for these types of things to be happening?
Is it us doing experiments? Is it the government doing experiments, or is something poking around?
Yeah, exactly. Like, who knows, right?
Thanks for talking to me.
Cool.
I really appreciate it. There's so many Canadian folks who have really, really good stories. And
totally.
And like I say, our American friends tend to drown us out. So it's good to hear Canadian ones. Wow, another interesting account. Let's take a break right here, and when we come back, we'll hear from Sarah and Stephanie about their experiences.
If you're looking for a smoking gun, I can absolutely guarantee you, you will not find it.
In October 2001, a series of letters filled with a deadly powder called anthrax were dropped into the U.S. mail system. What started as an unprecedented case turned into an unsettling mystery. Who sent these deadly letters, and why? From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, I'm Josh Dean, and this is Cover Up Season 4. The Anthrax Threat. Available now.
So first up, we're going to hear from our listener, Stephanie D.
Do you want to introduce yourself and tell me where you're from?
Sure. My name is Stephanie Dubé, and I live in Amherstburg, Ontario.
Oh, cool. And where did what happened to you happen?
It took place in Windsor, Ontario, which is just across the river from Detroit, Michigan.
Awesome. Can you tell us a bit about it? You said it's a short story, so let's hear it.
Okay. So at the time, I was a security supervisor, and I worked the midnight shift. And I arrived at a haunted church. That's another story.
Mm-hmm.
But I was getting the keys out. It was approximately 1 o'clock, quarter after one in the morning, because that was the time that I did my regular patrol at this particular site. And I was in the trunk getting the keys out. And I just had this weird feeling to look behind me and look up. And then all of a sudden, there was this huge diamond-shaped thing right above the church and just above the trees, and it took up the whole sky. There was no clouds in the sky, and I was sort of off to the edge of Windsor, so it was a dark area. But it's really hard to explain what it was. I mean, I wasn't scared. I wasn't, you know, shaking or anything, but I was just in awe. And the color of it was a different shade than the night sky. Mm-hmm. It was kind of shiny, but not really. And it looked like a black stone, kind of. And part of me wants to say there was lights, but other parts say that there wasn't, because I still at this point was like, I don't know what the heck I'm looking at. It made no noise at all. There's an airport in Windsor, and with the Detroit airport across the border, you see planes all the time and you're used to that kind of stuff. But there was literally no sound or anything at all. And like I said, it took up the whole sky, and it just appeared out of nowhere. And then I watched it for a couple of seconds, and then it just disappeared again. And I just went on with my business. I wasn't scared or anything. And there was no feeling of fear or whatever. And I never talked to anybody about it afterwards, because I was just like, did I really see that?
I've had similar kind of things happen to me when I used to work security. I did the same things.
And then I had a guy that night, another guard, about 2 hours later, he called me up and he says, can you stop by my site? And I'm like, okay. And it was about 20 minutes, you know, from where I was to where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you're going to think I'm crazy. And I said, "What? Why is that?" He says, I think I saw a UFO tonight. And I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did too. And we just left it at that. We didn't talk about it.
You guys didn't even like break it down what each other had seen?
Nope.
It's like, oh, no, that was pretty bonkers. And I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Absolutely. And it's like, I can still see it right now. You know, mm-hmm. I really can. And that was back in 2016. And, like I said, I never really talked to anybody about it. And it's not that I think people think I'm crazy or whatever. It's
right. Just, yeah.
It's, you know, but like I said, there was no feeling of being scared or anything, but it was pretty awesome. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
So when it disappeared, did it kind of just...
It just glided just away. And there was enough space where, because Windsor is flat, like there's, mm-hmm. you know, there's no hills or anything like that. And there were no trees or big buildings around. It literally just glided off, and then by the time it had cleared the area where I was, it was just gone. I couldn't see it. And like I said, when it came in, it did sort of the same thing. So and I mean, I could have, you can see for miles here. So if it would have been a plane or something, I would have thought, you know, I would have thought coming and carry right on, right? But
sure. Well, thank you so much for telling us your stories here, and you'll hear it next week when I release on Monday.
Okay, well, I hope you're able to use it, and keep up the good work. We really enjoy listening to your podcast.
What's your daughter's name?
Caitlin Mueller.
Caitlin. Okay, well, tell Caitlin I said hello, and thank you so much for
I will.
For her prompting you to tell your story.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, lastly, we're going to hear from Sarah. So can you tell me just a wee bit about yourself? I know you want to remain anonymous, so we'll just refer to you by Sarah, but you are in Ontario, is that correct?
I am, yeah. I live in the Hamilton area in a little valley town, and anyone familiar with it'll be easy to tell where I'm from, which is fine. Living in a little valley town
okay.
in the suburbs of Hamilton, yeah.
So how did you get interested in this topic? I mean, everybody as a kid sort of has an interest, but.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't have, like, I wasn't head on into it until I had a sighting. And, like, I loved watching, like, The X-Files when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of took it for what it was at that point, entertainment and stuff. And what kind of spiked my interest was when in December of 2006, I had a very strange sighting and experience. And that kind of, I fell down the rabbit hole trying to get answers.
Of course. Yeah. I would have too.
Yeah.
So set us up. Where were you? What did you see? And what went on?
Okay, sure. So the house that I was living in at the time had a really nice view. We had a walkout, and you could see, like, the valley that I live in is nestled in between two, like, sets of escarpments. And my view, I was right by one side, and then off in the distance, you could see, like, the steel plant, and you could see the Skyway Bridge, and it was just unobstructed. So I had a vast view. And I had put my then 2-year-old daughter to sleep. My husband at the time was playing a hockey league at night, and I was facing our windows that backed out onto this really nice view. And our TV was to the left, and I had our curtains were open. It was, I don't remember the time, but it was dark out. And I had this, like, feeling that I just needed to look out the window. I can't describe it any other way than I just needed to look out the window. And when I did, I saw, I observed a really bright circular light with three rotating lights on the side of it. And I was, like, pretty transfixed is the word that I would use.
Okay.
And transfixed. And then what was strange was I could hear something. Like, it was like there was something in my mind when I was seeing this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like if you could make music a language somehow, if that makes sense, I know it doesn't, but there were three repeating words in different, like, octaves in almost in like a mechanical way. And the three words were, we are here, and it just kept looping, like it was in a loop. And I just sat staring at this, hearing it, like, in my mind. Like, there wasn't an actual sound. I was just hearing this in my mind.
So, okay, I'm gonna stop you there. So you weren't drinking. You're not a drug user or
not anything. At all.
No. Yeah, so
nothing. I'm in the care of my daughter's asleep. I'm expecting my husband home a few hours later. I'm watching this, and it's almost like describe it. Like, it sounds so out of, like, it's not normal what's happening. And
right.
yet I'm kind of at the same time acting normal. I'm like, I'm going to pick up my phone because my next door neighbor was a pilot. And I was like, I'm going to get him to see what this is.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to use my phone, and it wouldn't work. And I went to call my husband at work, and it wouldn't work. So my phones wouldn't work. And then it all of a sudden just, like, it vanished. And so I was like, I'm going to go to bed. What else? Which seems weird when you've had this extraordinary thing that you're just going to carry on with a normal life activity. But I went to bed, and then I woke up, I don't know, a couple hours later, to my husband running up the stairs, whipping our slatted blinds opening, freaking out. And he was like, what is that? What is that? Get up. What is that? And when he opened the blinds, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lights coming from, like, the sky was dark and it was a clear night, but mm-hmm. these lights were coming down to the ground, and the sky was, it was like somebody put a cookie. I don't know, like if you were going to, like, it was just this shape that was, the sky was all black where the lights were coming down. And then there were stars on the outside of that.
Oh, strange.
Like there was a void space. And so we watched this for some time, and we were both really like shaken by it. And we went downstairs and tried to take a picture with the camera, and what showed up on the camera was different than what we were observing. Mm-hmm. The camera picture came out with all these like red flashy lines. It was almost like it wasn't working. It was like these red laser like things. And then, so we might have watched, I don't know the period of time, but then they just all of a sudden vanished. And when I say like hundreds, like it's a huge area that we watched, which shocked me, because I was like, are these all searchlights? Like what's happening and everything? And so mm-hmm. we didn't sleep that much that night. And the next morning I was like, everyone and their mother in the city has seen this. So it's going to be on the news. Like something's going to be on the news, and nothing. And I thought, okay, well, I need to figure out what had happened. And so I had called the Hamilton police, and I said, did you guys have any searchlights? Like, did anyone report anything in the sky? Like, this is what I saw. I Googled online, like, where would you report things that you don't understand that you've seen? I didn't share with anyone that experience of hearing that. Like, I had told people that there was a bright light a few hours earlier, but it's really, people really tend to think you're crazy when mm-hmm. you have like interaction somehow.
Yeah.
A sensory thing. Like if, yeah, it's still, really kind of taboo, even in like the UFO community, I guess. And so I came across PsyCan, which at that time was Paranormal Studies Investigations Canada. Mm-hmm. And they had a bunch of volunteers that would look into all subjects like cryptozoology, I found out, and ghosts and hauntings and UFOs. And so I wrote in and contacted someone and just said, this is what I saw. I'm going to try and figure it out. And the Hamilton police called back and told my husband not to let his wife look up in the sky anymore.
Oh,
so that
no.
was pretty embarrassing. Yep. Not very validating at all. And even though I wasn't screaming at the top of my lungs, like I've seen this UFO, there's everything. Like I was really perplexed. I thought it. And then, so then I started doing my own, like, what can I eliminate on my own investigation? Or looking into it. And so I contacted an atmospheric weather group and sat in on some of their sessions. Like maybe I saw something totally natural, and, you know, and I described what I saw to several people there, and they said it wasn't like light pillars could have been an explanation for the lights in the sky, but it doesn't explain how my husband would have seen them traveling, because you have to be at a certain static point to observe them. And mm-hmm. so I called the Hamilton Airport to see if there was any aircraft going along, and I actually ended up making a really solid connection with one of their controllers there, who helped me in later years when I was looking into things a little bit more with PsyCan. And to this day, I don't know what it was or what I experienced, but it was, it really affected me. Yeah. As time went by, my then husband just kind of shook it off. That was weird, but whatever, kind of life goes on. Mm-hmm. I was really, really, it threw my understanding of like what could be possible. It really impacted me.
I would definitely have that same reaction. And probably your experience from earlier in that same evening is what brought it home even harder for you. I've heard that before, like people having those repeated three words.
Really?
Yeah, this isn't the first time that I've heard that. And I can't recall exactly where I've read it or seen that, but it isn't the first time that I have heard of somebody hearing the words, "We are here," in some way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I was trying to figure out what it was, and I had been communicating with with somebody who's now a dear friend who was heavily involved in researching the topic. I mean, as much research as you can do, right? Because essentially you're just looking to eliminate natural or man-made causes. Like anyone that, like, I don't know how you can define something that's unknown or unexplained unless you find an identified flying object.
Exactly.
And so because I was so dogged in this pursuit, this person that I have become quite good friends with, this researcher, she had said, I get so many of these reports. Can you help with some Southern Ontario ones and just do it? We have a sheet. You look for location, intersection, what, you know, what they saw, and you document that way. And then you just do the best you can to figure out what these objects are. And sometimes I was able to do that. Like I was able to say, okay, this is where a model plane club was flying one day, and this is why they had one day. And so I was able to do that on a few things. And then there are other ones where I just, you know, didn't have that opportunity to do that. But I did that for some years, and it was really, really interesting because there's so many reports. There's so many. I just focused on Southern Ontario because that's where I would get the reports from. But
in the email that you sent me, you mentioned that you had another episode or another incident 2 months after. Yeah, talk about that.
So in February of 2007, again, it was another night that my husband had a hockey game in the men's league at night, and I had put my daughter to bed, and I fell asleep, and then I woke up like a bolt of lightning, and it felt like I, you know, if you've had a million cups of caffeine, you know how you just feel like you're vibrating, like you can just do whatever, like yep. I bolted out of bed with that feeling, and I felt like I needed to go check on my daughter, and I did, and she was okay. And I went downstairs, and it was that same feeling, like you need to look outside right now. And I looked outside, and there was a bright circular light that was moving in a very erratic fashion. And we have a lot of flight because we're close to Mount Hope, the airport. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware of what like airplane lights look like. And this was very big. It was not an air, and there weren't any flashing lights this time. It was just moving in these really erratic, fast paced fashion. And then I watched it just shoot up, and then it disappeared. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to email myself and this friend researcher I know through PsyCan so I can prove to myself I'm not sleeping. Like I'm awake. This wasn't a dream. This is what I've observed. And I sent that off. And the next morning she contacted me and said, not only did you see something, but we've had reports from Southern Ontario, and she's connected with people in the States, and they had reports in, I don't know, but they were all along like the eastern part of the seaboard. And she had found out that like the Phoenix lights happened years and years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But they had another blip that same night. So I found that a little bit, I wasn't the only one. Like I was starting to question my sanity at this point, right?
Sure.
Like what is even happening? And that's what happening. But I did not sleep at all that night. I was like I had those 100 cups of coffee. Like, just even, it was like you just had so much energy, like this vibrate. I wasn't tired. It was really strange. So, it was. Those would be the two in quite a close period of time.
By this point in the episode, I haven't told my own story, so maybe I'll just tell it to you, what I saw.
Yeah.
Some friends and I, we decided we would go steal strawberries from a local strawberry patch when I was a little kid. I guess not a little kid. We were probably 14 or 15 years old. And we decided, let's go to this strawberry patch and take some strawberries in the middle of the night. You know, we'd take a couple of handfuls. It wasn't like we were thieving the whole patch or anything like that. But while we were out there, it was a clear, beautiful summer night, probably July because the strawberries were out. And I looked up in the sky and I saw these two lights coming toward each other, and they didn't quite meet, but they spun around each other in a circular way and then went in totally different directions than either of them had come from.
Oh, wow.
My other friend there saw it and the other guy did not. You know, there's three of us there, but two of us saw it. And it's like, what the heck was that? And, wow. You know, we had a bit of a conversation among ourselves, but we're kids, right? We were like, I don't know. Was it? I don't know what it was to this day. I didn't ever report it or anything like that. And I haven't looked into any kind of possibilities of from that time. But I know that I saw something moving in the sky, bright lights moving in the sky in a way that it wasn't a satellite traveling across the sky. I know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything like that. It was these two lights coming at speed toward each other, spinning around each other like in almost a perfect circle, and then taking off in completely different directions. It was very, very weird.
Wow.
And to this day, I can recall that just like it was yesterday. But, you know, my experience wasn't obviously as frightening maybe as yours was. Did you feel really frightened? You said you just went to bed, which is interesting.
You know, it is. I was like, how could I have experienced this and just went to bed? Apparently that's not uncommon. More people that I have spoken to. And like when I say speak to, I don't speak to anyone. I'm actually not even in my house right now. I don't speak to people about this because it's just so, there's that stigma, right? And,
right.
But in the circle or when I would get those reports to look into, or even trying to do my own little, make sense of things, it's oddly not uncommon to just kind of carry on. It's almost like you're just snapped back to something and you just,
mm-hmm.
I need to make sense. I just need to carry on with life. I don't think I was frightened of the actual sighting. I was just my core beliefs of science and what it could was shaken, because to see that and experience that, A, you know, you kind of question your sanity a little bit, and then B, if you come to the conclusion that you're crazy, then you have to deal with that, right? Or but if you come to the conclusion that no, I'm not, I'm actually not, and this is something that I've experienced, what does that mean?
Rather than telling people you're crazy, let's look into what that experience means to them. We don't have to even determine what it was, but what kind of meaning does that have to you? It's like the whole DMT experience with people seeing certain things, and everybody who takes that particular drug sort of sees the same thing, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what is it about consciousness? Is it something quantum or what is going on? So it's really fascinating, like you say, a fascinating rabbit hole.
It is. And you hit it on the head like that. From my experience, that led me into really looking into, I had been interested in consciousness, but that really, I did a lot of research and looking and work on what that looks like and how our individual consciousness may impact from a sociological perspective. What does something mean to someone? What does something mean to a community? What does something mean to, and there's some really fascinating research done on parapsychology and UFOs from a sociological perspective, and it's really fascinating. And that's where that's where I've been recently. I don't necessarily think about my experience often, other than something that happened, and I don't speak about it much at all to anyone, actually, because it is it's still kind of seen as out there.
Well, because people are going to say, did Sarah have a psychotic break at some point? You know, those are real reactions to this kind of thing. So and it's why I mentioned things the way I did in the first episode about stigma around reporting and that kind of stuff, because people are afraid that people are going to think they're nuts.
And there's not a lot of opportunities to, I only know when we were receiving reports and I was looking into quite a few, you would, in the later years I was doing it, we would get reports coming from all walks of life, and there would be sightings where you would see it. And then you would get increasingly more where there's an experience to it, whether it was some people observed a light in the sky and then they'd think of a shape, or a shape would come into their mind and that object would do that. It would mimic what they were thinking. And I've had people from all, like, from various walks of life that you would think, not that you would need to, that would be really, like, well respected and renowned, like, that they wouldn't make these things up. Not that anyone would, but when you think, okay, well, if a first responder reported that, I might believe it a little bit more, because they have to use critical thinking and observational skills all the time, or somebody from the military. And there's a lot of people out there from those walks of life and others that have had the same experience, and they just need people to listen. And there's not a lot of space for that. Like, there's not, I would say there's not a lot of things. So I really appreciate you giving voice to this. And it just makes it, like, it's, takes away some of the stigma and feeling alone or weird, or, you know, like, you're doing a really wonderful thing, especially for people who have experienced anything like this. So I think that's awesome.
Well, thank you very much. And that's a perfect note to end on, a compliment to me.
Well-deserved, well-deserved.
There you go. Okay, so thank you so much, Sarah, for doing this with me.
You're so welcome.
So there are some stories from our listeners. Holy crap. It's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are just regular folks who think they've seen something. Yeah. And had experiences. Like I've said earlier in the episode, it's not up to me to say whether or not these people are telling the truth. It's not up to me to determine, you know, anything about the veracity of these sightings. It's just interesting to hear what people's experiences are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people saw things.
Exactly. Right. Like, I could really do, like I mentioned in the first episode, an entire show just based on UFOs in Canada, because there is so much information out there. So to close this show, Matthew and I got to do something super, super fun, which was go to the back gate of Area 51. First, we visited Rachel, Nevada, which is the town that is, I wouldn't call it a town, it's a village.
Hamlet.
A hamlet that is closest to Area 51. And later we traveled down a dirt road that all of a sudden became paved as we got closer to the military installation, which was fascinating. Actually, we'll talk about that in a bit. But so we went to Crime Con, and Matthew and I decided in the first day, because we're working on this UFOs thing, we're so close to Area 51, let's rent a car and go for a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice to get out of the casino.
It was really nice to get out of the casino, because no matter if you're inside or outside in Vegas, you're always in Vegas.
Yeah, the Strip, it's like one big casino / shopping mall. Even when you're outside, you feel like you're inside.
It's like an adult theme park.
Yeah.
Is what it's like. And it was just like, I was so worn out by Vegas.
It's just, it's overly stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. So we escaped to the desert, and it was a beautiful drive.
So it was a great drive. We headed out, headed north toward highway number 375, which is...
You didn't listen to me when I said we should get some gas for the car?
Yeah, I didn't listen.
And we literally, I think, glided into the first gas station.
Like
the engine stopped and like the car just sort of glided right to the petrol pump.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. Like we Googled while we were on the way, how far away it was. And we were like talking about like, oh my God, are we close? Are we close? And I was so obsessed with it. I didn't see pretty much anything on the highway other than, okay, there's so many kilometers left and so many kilometers left.
I was looking
left
for boreholes for water.
Exactly.
And we even shut off the air conditioning in the middle of the desert so we didn't use as much gas.
Yeah, it was crazy. So when we pulled in, I worked it out. The car had 8 kilometers left to go before it would have been dead out of gas.
Yeah, we didn't really go out, but it felt like we were going in there.
We were really...
It was craziness.
Yeah, it was really not good. So when you see a sign that says, there's no gas for 70 miles, that's true. That is true. And if you only have a quarter of a tank of gas, you should probably get some.
Yeah, well, it would have been good if the car rental company had actually filled the tank for us.
Well, they didn't.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they're supposed to do? I don't know. Yeah. I didn't fill it.
And they were an hour late with the car.
They were. Yeah, but I didn't fill it up for them either. So we gave it back to them in exactly the same state.
Yeah.
Although it was a really dirty car.
All the dust.
But so we head to Rachel. We got our gas. Probably we're about 20 minutes away from our destination. Yeah. So we get our gas. And our first stop along the extraterrestrial highway is the black mailbox.
You've got mail.
Yeah. And so the black mailbox is a place. I don't know what the mailbox is for, but it's a place where people leave mail for the aliens, which is really, really fascinating. And you open up the black mailbox. Matthew and I took pictures
of
each other. And
guys, the black mailbox is literally in the middle of nowhere. Like, you're driving down this road. There's no building around it. It's just this black mailbox box by the side of the road.
By the side of the road. And another road which leads into Area 51.
Total dirt road.
Yeah. So we didn't follow that one because that one is not only a drive of miles, then there's a walk after that to get to outside Area 51 where you can look down on top of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's probably not the best thing for us to do because we don't have any water or anything like that. So I didn't want to do that. When you open up the black mailbox, people have left all these kind of cool things in there. Like, there's stickers everywhere. Everybody puts their stickers. I didn't have any Dark Poutine stickers with us, so it was like a little bit of a drag.
Oh, but I did. You should have asked me.
No, but there was a tinfoil hat inside the black mailbox, and there's bottles of booze and some star-kissed tuna for Charlie the
Star-Kissed.
Yeah, for Charlie the tuna, and you know, cigarettes, pencils, bottle caps, and all that kind of stuff. But people leave notes for the aliens, which is really interesting. And this one is from so I took a picture of someone's note. It says, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Alien, I'm Cheryl and I'm with my friend Suzanne, sometimes known as Thelma and Louise, or Sweet and Salty. Loved our visit. Sorry we missed you. Lots of love." So that's cool. You know, like people aren't taking it overly serious. They're just like, okay, it's Area 51. We know that weird stuff has happened there, and it's sort of a black bag area for the United States Air Force, which is true. That is actually a true thing that they do. More secretive experiments out there in the desert with flying things. So that is true. They admitted to that in 2013 that they do black bag things out there. But since then, people have been traveling, or for years, people have been traveling to Area 51. Mm. And so why shouldn't we do it? So our next stop were the signs. There was the signs for Rachel, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Stop took our pictures there. The signs for the extraterrestrial highway. Again, everything is just covered in stickers.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you didn't think of using one of our stickers.
I don't know. It's like,
I was just all disappointed.
I was like, oh, it's graffiti.
It's not, though, because everybody's doing it.
That's true.
We're not breaking the law. And so we get to Rachel, and the first place that we went is the little Alien Inn. And it's like a little bar, cafe, diner.
It is exactly what I thought it would be.
Okay, now describe it for people.
So, after leaving Vegas, you want something real.
Something real. Something
Vegas is
simple.
Very plastic feeling, right? It's overproduced.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like a little cafe. Like, it's literally a crappy little diner.
yeah.
with mediocre food. Coffee was lukewarm, sort of, you know, nice enough, but surly, you know, bartender.
Yeah, and they took like forever to bring us our pie.
The pie took like half an hour.
Yeah.
And like it's not overproduced. You know, it has like a truck holding a fake UFO on the front, yeah. and it's just not overdone, and it's kind of cheesy but real, you know. Yeah. That's why I liked it.
Yeah, I loved it, and I got some really cool little trinkets there. I got some pins.
I was sitting down, I was starving, ordering food. I look over, and Mike's like an armful of like the tchotchke that they're selling there, like alien mugs and dirt and t-shirts and caps.
Yeah, I got Area 51 dirt. I got a hat that says Area 51. I got a shirt that says Area 51.
And I was like, Mike, I could have like gone outside and just grabbed some sand off the ground.
I don't care. I want stuff that is branded Area 51. It was fantastic. And so I did that. We did that. But afterward, we weren't sure if that was going to be the end of our trip or not. And I got a feeling, I got the sense from you were done.
No.
Like I said, oh, well, I'd like to go to the back gate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got the sense from you, like, I kind of don't want to go.
Well, I didn't know how far it was. So I was like,
yeah, that's what I was.
We already ran out of gas, you know?
No, we had a full tank of gas by this time. So what I did was I just decided I'm going to go to the next sort of little store here. And it's just a tiny little storefront full of things, again, tchotchke alien related things, called the Alien Cowpoke. And the lady in there was really nice. And I said, I'm going to ask you a question you probably get asked all the time. How do you get to the back gate of Area 51? Because honestly, on the maps,
No,
it's like shitty drawings from like Microsoft Paint.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually going to probably create a map to Area 51 and put it on our website and get in big trouble for it.
List.
Yeah. I don't care if I'm on a list. I honestly don't. But, yeah, so she said, well, you go out this road and you turn right on 375, the extraterrestrial highway.
Mm-hmm.
You drive a mile from here and you see a stop sign. Okay, on the right. Take that right and drive for 10 miles down this dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get to the back gate of Area 51. And I was just like, so it's that simple?
Yeah.
You know, it's that easy to find? And she's like, yeah. Yeah, just do that. And I was thinking, okay, so I'm trusting a local with directions. My cousin and I, we gave somebody crappy directions one time. Person from...
You can't get there from here.
No. What happened was this person was in Bridgewater in July.
You're evil.
I didn't do it. My cousin did it. So this person came to Bridgewater in July. They're from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They had skis on the top of their car. They've come to Canada to go skiing in July, and they're in Nova Scotia.
It's hilarious.
And so my cousin, you know, they pull over and they say, hey, where's the ski hill from here? And my cousin gave them directions, says, okay, get on this highway heading north and just drive as far north as you can possibly go. So he directed them to the 103.
Keep going.
And just keep going north.
Eventually they'd run into snow.
No, what they would run into is Cape Breton.
No.
Oh, well.
If you did that in Ontario, just north, you would eventually run into permafrost at least.
Yeah, at some point.
Like 3 days later.
So we drove down this dirt road, and it wasn't too badly maintained. It was a pretty good dirt road, but... At one point, closer to the installation, probably after about 8 miles, it's paved again.
Yeah.
But the paved road was shittier than the dirt road.
Yeah, it had potholes. And
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike doesn't care about potholes.
No, I just
car.
Smash like into
full them. Full blast through them. I'm like bashing my head on the roof of the car.
I did not rent from Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Anyway, yeah, so we just, you know, plowed through. I did actually avoid some of them after hitting the first one.
Yeah.
But... So we drive up to the back gate, and here it is, this military installation, just like you would think, with razor wire and chain link fence and all these signs all over the place and video cameras on these tall things and a gate a double gate.
Yeah.
So you have to go through one gate, talk to somebody, and then go through another gate before you're actually in the installation. So if you're thinking about storming Area 51, that's probably not going to go so well for you. But I decided that I am just going to walk right up to the fence. And so Matthew kind of hung back a little bit.
Which is weird, considering I like to pull up to the back gate.
Anyway, and so I took a picture of myself in wearing the Area 51 warning restricted area deadly force authorized hat.
Super tourist.
Like, I wanted to do that. And it says warning military installation off limits to unauthorized personnel. And it gives like a whole bunch of stuff and punishment up to 1 year imprisonment and $5,000 fine. And then somebody put like a little UFO sticker on that sign. And then there's a sign right by the gate that says, warning, U.S. Air Force installation. It is unlawful to enter this area without permission of the installation commander. While on the installation, all personnel and the property under their control are subject to search. Warning, no trespassing. Maximum punishment, $1,000 fine, 6 months imprisonment, or both strictly enforced. And then photography in this area is... photography of this area is prohibited. So what did I do? I took a picture.
So Mike's right up there.
Yeah.
Taking photos.
Yep.
And what happened, Mike?
I set off the alarm.
No. Seriously, guys, no shit. So I thought Mike was going to shit himself. He skittled away from there. We jumped into the rental car and like took off.
We didn't speed off, but we drove
a little bit faster than the way it was.
And people have said, Mike, you're going to be on a list. And honestly, I don't care. I really don't care because I don't do anything.
Oh, it just makes your life more interesting.
Like, if I'm on a list, great. Fantastic. Oh, you're that guy who set off the alarm at Area 51. I think everybody gets that if they're too close because I've seen some videos of other people doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I set off the alarm at Area 51. Bucket list item checked off.
Ding. You know, my friend Lanning, he lives on the island now. He used to live here in Vancouver.
Yep.
He spent 18 days there doing his U.S. military desert training.
Oh, wow.
And he said he kept his eyes open for spacecrafts, but he didn't see anything.
Didn't see anything at all. But oh, well. So that is it.
For your Dark Poutine bonus episode on UFOs, listener encounters, and our trip to Area 51. Don't forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple. And I know Matthew would say, bye-bye, everybody. Bye.
I said to my parents, don't trust her. I wouldn't listen.
Every family has a secret.
Joy Delaney, mother of four, has gone missing.
From the author of Big Little Lies comes a chilling new mystery to W.
You were an emotional chaos sinkhole, Amy, and I'm sick of it!
Starring Annette Bening.
Nobody can break your heart like your own children.
And Sam Neill.
She will come back. Here we go. Strap in.
Apples never fall. All new Thursdays, only on W. Stream on Stack TV.